This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Sarah Stark, in for Aaron Allen, and this is The Rundown. So I'm a 90s baby, and since I was a kid, I feel like I've watched the narrative around climate change go from hopeful to kind of hopeless. We see headlines all the time that climate change is progressing even faster than scientists previously thought, and the real-life evidence is all around us. Meanwhile, our devices and clothes and furniture are often being made more cheaply, so it feels almost impossible to avoid waste. Now, I'm not saying we should take on personal responsibility for climate change, but it's hard to feel like we have any real agency here. So I love to find little spots of hope where I can. And Katie Osborne really makes me feel that.
So I'm an avid dumpster diver. The Chicago alleyways are absolute treasures for stuff.
Nice.
But there is such a stigma attached to picking things out of the trash.
Katie is the founder of the Nowhere Collective. She loves creating with the stuff she finds in alleys. And when she became a mom, she started to feel the urgency of climate change in a different way. So she set out to connect consumers with artists who use sustainable and reclaimed materials. She does that through a series of trashy markets, which are exactly how they sound. Makers who use trash as their medium come to the markets and sell their products. Katie recently sat down with Erin to talk more about her work. Now, she isn't claiming that any of this will solve climate change, but I love the way she thinks about making consumption just that much more sustainable and ethical. I'll let Erin take it from here.
What do you love about where we've landed as a society in this upcycling space?
If I can do anything, it's just to educate people on the difference between recycling and upcycling. And reusing and upcycling, too. And there is a very important distinction between the three. We tend to focus on recycling, which is actually downgrading the materials. So we are taking plastic and we're breaking it apart, and then it's a lesser version of itself. And we're turning it into something else, and that's still good to do. Reusing is really one-to-one. You're taking a table, you're using it as a table. We should do more of that. There's enough furniture in the alleys of Chicago to fill every household in the city. Upcycling is where I have the most enthusiasm and find the most potential, because you can take a bottle, a glass bottle, smash it, and then upgrade it and turn it into a concrete good. You can embed it in something else, and then it lives a new life in a new form, and it has even more value than the original product that it used to be.
Give me an example.
So Chris, who's one of the makers in our community, he owns Alley Shack Wood Shop. He goes around to the alleys with his wagon, and it's adorable, has a wagon, picks up tables from the alley, furniture, hardwood furniture, anything, breaks it down into pieces, and then whittles it into spoons, bowls, other like tiny little drawers that are so magical. And so they get to live a new life and serve a new purpose from its original purpose. And it actually increases the value of that thing that was going to be trash.
Yeah. I love that. Actually, the other day I was on the phone with our producer, Justin, and I had walked past some furniture that had been set out on the street. And I was so excited because I need a nightstand, and there was a nightstand out there. And I was like, oh, I should, you know, stop and pick it up and bring it in. But then I got close to it and it was all like water damaged.
Yeah.
And it was totally messed up. And
it's
I was like,
so sad.
Yeah, I know. I was so sad because first of all, I need a nightstand. But secondly, like, what's going to happen to it now?
Yes.
Right. Like, and then before I even got off the block, right, I was on my way in to work. And before I even got off the block, like, it was gone. Like,
wow.
People came, who are the people.
Yes.
those folks in the truck came and they took it and you know, and they probably took it to a landfill.
And it just sits there. And that's where I think my passion for this comes. I mean, my spouse is a lovely person and God bless him for living with me because I bring stuff in constantly. We live among the stuff and I do it because I see the potential in that stuff. And those magical moments of when I can find a use for that thing, I'm just like, oh, you know what I need is a circular plastic tube. And I'm like, oh my God. I have a hula hoop in the basement that's broken. I can use that. And so like those moments keep me going.
Yeah.
A term I thought of yesterday was like, you got to let them marinate. They have to sit in a closet and marinate.
Interesting.
And your mind will marinate on it too. And that's where we're bringing, nowhere really is facilitating that connection between people who have the stuff that would otherwise end up in the trash with the people who have the creativity and the skill to be able to transform that stuff and use it in a way that is extending the life and reaching its full potential. And for me, that's where I think the harmony is going to come from. Each year, 267 million tons of trash arrives at the landfills and it goes nowhere. It sits in someone else's backyard, which is a problem because we have nowhere else to go. I mean, we've heard it. There is no planet B. So we have to live with this trash, whether we like it or not. The privilege we have here is that it's not literally in our backyards. I mean, it's being sent to someone else's backyard and they have to live with it. And so I think about that person.
Who? Tell us.
The most marginalized communities have to deal with this stuff. The people who are living next to these landfills are people of color, the low-income communities. They're people who are going to have to deal with the consequences that we can just toss aside the stuff and not have to think about it again. I think about those people who have to live with my stuff after I put it in the trash every single time I open the trash can.
Yeah, and it's all of us, right? It's including the person who may be listening, right, who is living in that community.
Yeah.
We all throw our stuff in the trash, right?
Yes.
And so, it's definitely important to think about. I want to talk about trashy markets. Mm-hmm. You started talking about some of the artists in the collective that you work with. You started Trashy Markets to kind of give yourself and other creatives an opportunity to share their work. Tell me about the markets. How does it work and how did that go?
So I, in the middle of trying to figure out after the pandemic, everything shut down, what am I doing? What is this business? You know, what am I doing? So I started to repair clothes with embroidery and I was upcycling things myself to sell. And I was like, okay, well, where am I going to sell this? So I started to look for markets and I was like, there's no market for just upcycled goods. Mm. And I needed to connect with people who were going to care about this thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I have organized events in the past. I'll just put a market on. So last year was the year of Trashy Markets. We had four of them. I planned six. Two were canceled for weather, which was sad. But
wow.
Four Trashy Markets. And this last one we had in April at Gallagher Way, the Trashy Earth Market, was our biggest yet. We had 3,000 people come through.
Wow, congratulations.
Shoppers, thank you. And Pickle Fest helped. Shout out to Pickle Fest. For bringing some people down the
street.
Like
fermenting folks?
I don't know.
And like canning
literally
and pickling things? Okay.
Cucumbers? I don't know. So so we had, it's just been a blast having these events to connect people. And this last Trashy Market was the first time we invited shoppers to bring materials to the makers.
Nice.
So these makers put out a call for specific materials. It was glass bottles. It was silk scraps. I mean, it was just a full range of things. And then with that exchange of materials sparked conversation, the shoppers started to realize, oh, I have this stuff in my house. I can bring this and someone can use it. That is a thrill for both sides. The shopper gets to dump things on a person who is excited to receive it.
Yes.
Way better than putting it in the trash. And then you not only alleviate some guilt, but there's this joy in connecting with a person on a very human level. Mm-hmm. And that translates to dollars.
Yeah.
I mean, those makers who collected materials had a connection with someone and that person was like, I'm now going to support you by
yes.
buying your finished product. And so Jasmine, who was at this market, sold $1,000 at this market, which is more than double what she has sold on Etsy over the past 3 years. So it is working.
Hmm.
I mean, there are definitely opportunities here to connect people and materials. And that's why Nowhere exists.
Yeah. You have a project that you've been working on more recently. It's called Loom. Tell me about it.
So Loom 360 came out of an invite from H&H Americas, which is the largest craft industry trade show. They invited us to pop up at art installation. So I worked with two other makers, Janata, who owns Silly Bells, and then Nandi, who owns Bliss Joy Bowl. They're very textile focused. So I said, what could we do? And Nandi had the idea of putting up a large loom that we could hand weave reclaimed textiles.
Okay. So this is like a textile installation.
Yes.
Got you.
So we popped it up for the first time at our trashy market in Oak Brook. And it was hard to know what these tapestries were going to turn out to be, because it was like, if we have the community come and build a thing together,
mm-hmm.
it actually turned into kind of the most beautiful yes and craft activity.
Nice.
Where it was like, oh, you put that piece here, yes, and here's my piece. And then by the end of it, in the middle of it, actually, you're kind of like, oh, is this going to be any good? But by the end of it, you're like, wow, that actually looks like art. That
uh-huh.
looks like someone had thought and had an intention at the beginning. And so to see kids come and adults have fun and really participate in the art making, I mean, that's where you get your hands in the creation process and you're doing it shoulder to shoulder with someone else.
Yeah.
It just starts to get you thinking a little bit differently.
As I'm learning about your work, I couldn't help but think of the phrase, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yeah.
How do you think about this juxtaposition of creating something new without consuming something new?
Oh, this is the living in the in-between. I mean, this is where I sometimes find a lot of internal conflict.
Mm.
I mean, I want people to buy these things, but I'm also advocating for people to stop consuming. And that's a really hard spot to be in. But at the end of the day, these goods that these makers are making, we aren't cutting down trees. We aren't mining precious minerals. We aren't using our natural resources. We aren't transporting things across the seas. We're paying the people making the stuff. So we're checking a lot of boxes when it comes to shopping ethically, responsibly, sustainably.
Yeah. Hmm. Do you feel like with that kind of living in the in-between, I guess it makes me wonder what challenges come up with this work for you?
Yeah. Even, you know, when I say that Nowhere is a marketplace, and, you know, we're supporting makers who are using reclaimed materials and transforming those materials. Even the word marketplace just, like, gives me a little bit of the heebie-jeebies. I'm like, oh, we're doing commerce. And so, like, I don't love capitalism. It's not serving anybody. But it's the world we live in. And people are going to keep buying things. And my hope, and actually the magic of these trashy markets, is that it does inspire people to rethink the stuff they buy and then maybe gives them pause when they are about to throw something away.
Mm.
Who else can use this? What else can I do with it? How can I let it live its fullest life and use this thing to its fullest extent. And you know, I grew up in a family of six. We had to be very resourceful. And I like to say my dad would put pickle juice in the ranch bottle to make the ranch go further.
Mm.
Oh, also tastier. So I have lived in an environment where we're trying to use stuff to its fullest extent. And I think we can keep thinking about that with everything we do throughout our daily lives.
Yeah. A lot of this is making me think about this agency conversation that comes up so much when it comes to climate change and,
yes.
you know, okay, we can do our individual parts, but what about these corporations
yes.
who are, you know, doing this damage on such a grand scale? You talked about how becoming a mother really lit the fire
yes.
For you. And I wonder how you think about your own agency and that concept in the context of this work that you do.
I've lived both sides of this. I have lived in that lonely, isolated place of like, oh, okay, I'm just going to do this little thing by myself and do my own small part as a individual person in a world of how many billions. And that is not fun. I mean, that is a sad place. And for me, you know, I don't know if this connects with most people, but I kind of see it as like we're the band playing as the Titanic goes down. We are loving.
That's
such a, it's a sad.
It's just such a rich, like, you know, vision, like metaphor. Yeah.
And I don't love the doom and gloom message. I really advocate for a positive, uplifting, hopeful message. I have to live in that space or else I will dig myself a hole and bury myself in it because I can't go on if I'm really going to go to that place of doom and gloom. And the only way I was able to pull myself out of it was to be in community with other people mm-hmm. who are also doing this, who understand the seriousness of it, but don't care. Like, we really just want to make things. We love working with our hands. We love the thrill of the hunt, finding a thing, and then being able to repurpose that thing and give it new life. That is a joyful moment. And then you connect with others who appreciate the work you do.
Mm.
And so that's the hope. I mean, the hope is that we can at least love on each other, find compassion for each other, connect on a deep level. And then once you are connected with your neighbor and connected with those people in your circle, you're motivated to keep going. And that's all we can do. And it makes me want to do better.
Katie Osborne is the founder of Nowhere Collective. To learn more and stay updated on future trashy markets, head to nowhere-collective.com. And that's it for today. Aaron Allen, Justin Bull, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve is our editor and executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is part of the NPR network. And if you love the show, please rate us, review us, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find The Rundown. I'm Sarah Stark. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.